Finish the second chapter of Daniel and possibly cover part or all of the third chapter. But we got some very important territory in this last part of the second chapter of Daniel. We want to begin at about the 30th or 31st verse. And in this section we have some prophecy that is very important and profound prophecy so far as the church is concerned. It's also a very important prophecy so far as the history of the world is concerned, because this tells a major segment of world history, of civilized man as we have known it up to this time. It's one of the greatest proof texts that we have for proof as to when the church was established, as to when the kingdom was established. And it emphatically proves many elements about the time of the establishment of the kingdom. So beginning in the 30th verse, rather the 31st verse of Daniel 2. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. Now the setting is, of course, Daniel is telling King Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon, he's telling him the dream that he had. Now what had happened, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he couldn't remember what the dream was. And so when he asked his astrologers and magicians and sorcerers and wise men and so on, none of them could even begin to interpret the dream because they didn't know what the dream was. And so Nebuchadnezzar insisted that they tell him the dream, then tell him the interpretation, which Daniel was able to do. And so here now we have Daniel giving him the dream as well as the interpretation. In the last section now, we covered the background as to what Daniel is doing in Babylon and the time and all that that occurred. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the clay, rather the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. The stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. So what the dream consisted of then was this great image, and he describes the image as being brightness and excellent. The form thereof was terrible, he said. It's the image of a human form that had a head of gold. It had a breast and arms of silver. It had a belly and thigh of brass, and had feet of iron, and then the legs of iron, and the feet and toes were of iron mingled with the miry clay. And then there was this stone that was cut out of the mountain, cut without hands, that started to break this image, broke the feet first, and then it broke the rest of the image, and as he describes it there in the 35th verse, and it said it became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And you know, these people, more of them spent their time making a living in farming and agriculture than they do now, and so the summer threshing floor had probably had a lot of memories and thoughts for men like Daniel and those who would read this later. It was a place of summer activity. He didn't use it during the winter. And so just these kingdoms would be like the chaff carried away with the wind. Now let us get on verse 37 and begin with the interpretation now of this dream. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. Now Nebuchadnezzar was a much more powerful king than we might think. He quite possibly was one of the most, if not the most, powerful king of all times because of the vastness and the accelerated development that his kingdom and his people had. You know, last time now we studied about this city of Babylon and the great structures that were there and the high development of the architecture and skill of these people. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. It seems that from the description here that Babylon and its king, Nebuchadnezzar, had influence over all the world, wherever men were, wherever the beasts of the field were, and where the fowls of the air are. Why, he had influence. That's why he called him a king of kings. There's just no amount of glory that you could give an earthly king, and that seemed that Nebuchadnezzar didn't deserve to have from the standpoint of power and ability. But then he says, thou art the head of gold. So as we look at this image now, we're going to see what the image is made of. So we start with the head of gold. Thou art the head of gold. Now this head of gold represents the empire that Nebuchadnezzar was the head of. And it's called three names: the Chaldean Empire, the Assyrian Empire, and the Babylonian Empire. Chaldean from the region that it was in, and Assyria, the Assyrian Empire, because Assyria was an empire that had been incorporated into it, and Babylonian because of the city that was the capital city of it. And this kingdom now, as we begin to really look at it and see the history of it, this kingdom really began way back with Nimrod. Nimrod was a grandson of Noah, a descendant of Cush. Well, he would be a great grandson of Noah. Cush was his father, and Cush was the son of Ham, and Ham was in the descendant of the son of Noah. And this is found in Genesis 10, verses 8 through 10. And it tells a little bit about Nimrod and about him starting Babel and these various cities. And really, this is the beginning of the of this kingdom. This kingdom was begun, we might say then, the year after man of 1771, and it lasted till the year after man of 3466, which is some 1700 years. Or if you want to look at some other dates, it began in B.C. 2233, and it ended in B.C. 538. So it was a long-lasting kingdom, 1,700 years. But it reached its crowning of glory and achievement. It reached the time in which we are speaking of it now with the founding of the Babylonian element of it and the establishment of Nebuchadnezzar shortly after his father began as the king. So thou art the head, he says. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all things shall it break in pieces and bruise these, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. Now, he names here then briefly the other kingdoms, so let's look at them. The kingdom that would arise after Babylonia, he said, would be inferior to thee, and it was one that was of silver. Now this next kingdom was the one represented by the breast and the arms of silver. It was the Medo-Persian Empire, and it began, as we said, at 538, whenever Babylonia was overthrown. Really, he was overthrown by the Medes, and then shortly after that, the Persians came in, and it was a joined Medo-Persian Empire. And as we can see on our map here, here's Palestine. Over here is the area of Ur of the Chaldees, probably originally the Garden of Eden. And right here is Babylon. And so here's the great kingdom of Babylon, and it's where it's centered. And then, of course, it extended much further than this. But Assyria comes in, and the Medes come in. From here's Media. They were the ones that eventually then took over this kingdom. They're the ones that followed it up. And the Bible describes it as an inferior kingdom. And it didn't last, it lasted several hundred years, about 200 years. And that's the territory that it covered. Then the next kingdom that followed after that was the one represented by the belly and thigh of brass. And it was the Macedonian, or the Greek Empire. And its center was over here in this area known as Macedonia. Now, this time we have Palestine in this little area. Babylonia is way back down here. It's not on this map. And so here it's the Macedonian, and it included all of this area, too. And it was the third kingdom. And now this kingdom was originated and started by, presided over by Alexander the Great. And you know, Alexander the Great was a young man. He was in his 20s, and he conquered kingdom after kingdom after kingdom, and he sat down at the young age of somewhere in his early 20s and cried because there were no more worlds to conquer. And the dates on Alexander the Great were B.C. 331 to B.C. 323. So just a few years, 8 years or so, Alexander the Great was in his heyday, and then he died. But that was the third kingdom, and it was a powerful kingdom, this Macedonian, and it consumed, or it incorporated all the other kingdoms up to that time into it. And then we have the fourth kingdom, and that is the one of the legs and feet that are of iron. And we'll get a little bit more to them in just a moment, but let me say a little bit about them. After Alexander the Great, then his kingdom was divided among his generals. Originally it was four generals, and then it finally was boiled down to two major generals. One of them was called Ptolemy Lagus, and the other was Seleucus Nicator. Well, this Ptolemy Lagus, he took over the area of Egypt. I'm going to have to go back to this other map. I believe it gives us on here. The area of Egypt, which would be down here, and Seleucus, he took over Assyria, or Syria. So we had these two major strongholds now, which came off from the Babylonian kingdom, which was Egypt and Syria. Now, of course, they had existed before this time, but these are the offshoots now from the Macedonian or the Grecian kingdom. And they were very powerful. They were the most powerful elements in the world at that time. And they're what represents the two legs of iron. They are the two legs of iron. And then we're going to see how that these two legs of iron then became the Roman Empire. As the Roman Empire came in and had its seat in Italy, but it incorporated all of this area. And it began by the powers that were Syria and Egypt. And so the legs then, which were of iron, went on into the Roman Empire, which became the feet that were iron mingled with the clay. Because these people in the Roman Empire incorporated so many other kingdoms and so many other powers and made alliances good alliances, bad alliances, and with inferior people and so on, until it was two kinds of people, the iron and the clay, one being ruled by the other, but they never were completely bonded together as one unit. Excuse me just a minute. So now let's proceed with our, I forgot which verse we stopped at.
41.
Did we cover 41? All right. Whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Now this is what eventually happened in the Roman Empire. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Now I'd like to read here for a moment from Mr. Clark's book about what he says about these two legs of iron. These two legs of iron became absorbed in the Roman government, which also partook of the iron nature, strong military, and extensive in its victories, and by its various conquests united to and amalgamated with itself various nations, some strong and some weak, so as to be fitly represented in the symbolical image by feet and toes, partly of iron and partly of clay. Thus, as the Legdae and Seleuciae, which are those two generals, arose out of the wreck of the Grecian Empire, so the Roman Empire arose out of their ruin. But the empire became weakened by its conquest. And although, by mingling themselves with the seed of men, that is, by strong leagues and by matrimonial alliances, as mentioned above, they endeavored to secure a perpetual sovereignty, yet they did not cleave to each other, and they also were swallowed up by the barbarians' northern nations. Thus terminated these four most powerful monarchies. So their downfall really was started by the fact that they made these alliances, and by they conquested so many nations that they were not like and not compatible with, until finally they were overcome and overthrown by the barbarous Gauls from the north. And this happened in about 376, or rather 476 A.D. And we studied about this in the book of Revelation, about the actual fall of the Roman Empire as it was known at that time. So that's what is happening in this big image. These legs were of iron. But then the feet, which were a part of the iron, they mingle with the clay, and then this, they could never cleave one to another, even though they were of the same empire. Now in verse 44, and in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Now this to me is probably the most significant verse of the whole passage, and that is where he states that in the days of these kings. Now we've seen what the kingdoms were, the head, which was the Babylonian Empire, the breast, which was the Medo-Persian, the belly and the thighs, which were the Alexandria, or rather the Macedonian or Grecian Empire, and then the legs of iron and the feet of iron and clay, which were the Roman Empire. In the days of these kings, that is before these kings ceased to be, one would succeed the other, but while the last one was still in existence, in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. Now this kingdom he's talking about is the kingdom of heaven, which of course is synonymous to, in many respects, with the church. There's a little difference in the kingdom of heaven and the church, and that is the church happens to be the people who are in the kingdom, and the kingdom includes the people and the king and the law and the territory. So you can't have one without the other. You can't have the people for a kingdom without having the kingdom, and you can't have the kingdom without having the people. So to have one, you have to have the other. Well, in the days of these kings is when the God of heaven did set up this kingdom. And he says it'll be a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Now, this kingdom then that's set up in the days of these kings would never be succeeded by another kingdom. It'd never be done away with, never be superseded, never be succeeded. Well, now we know as we study history and as we study the Bible that the kingdom was established, the church was established, if you please, on the day of Pentecost, which is recorded for us in the book of Acts, the second chapter of Acts. This was some 40 days, some 50 days rather, after the Lord had been crucified, and some 10 days after he had ascended into heaven, then this kingdom of heaven was established. It was established in the days of these kings. Those who say that it was established at another time, a later time, like 1914, for example, are absolutely wrong, because these kings did not exist during the year 1914. Those who are looking for the kingdom to come yet in the future are absolutely wrong, because the days of these kings has already passed. They do not exist anymore. So it had to come before the Roman Empire was destroyed. And we mention that as being in 476 A.D. And this fits then perfectly with what the Bible says. And this kingdom is not going to be destroyed. That is, we don't look for another kingdom to come in the place of this one, or to supersede this one, or to overthrow it, or overpower it, or to take the place of it in any kind of way. And then he goes on to say, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. That is, this kingdom is not going to be left for some other power to come in and to take over its territory, to assume the rule for it, like each of these other kingdoms had happened. Babylon had someone take over it. The Medo-Persians had someone take over them. Macedonian Empire, Roman Empire, each one has had somebody to take its place. But this kingdom that the God of heaven is going to set up in the days of these kings will not be left to other people. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Now that is, this kingdom is going to outlast all the other kingdoms. And of course, that is precisely what has happened. It has outlasted, it has consumed all the other kingdoms, so that it still exists today. It's as powerful now, it's as viable, it's as much available to us for membership today as it has ever been, whereas these other kingdoms, it'd be very hard to become a Roman citizen right now. Impossible. There is no Rome. You couldn't become a Roman citizen. You couldn't become a member of Alexander's kingdom, or his court, or the Medo-Persian, or the Babylonian Empire. Impossible. But yet this kingdom is still here and alive and well and in very much prominence in the scheme of things. Now, in the 45th verse, "For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. Now let us look for a moment at this stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands. A stone cut out of the mountain without hands, and it break in pieces the other kingdoms. That stone now is representative of the church, and of course the church is built upon Christ, so it's representative of Christ and his kingdom. And let us look now at some scripture that'll teach us some things, or remind us of some things that we may already know about this use of the word stone in relation to Christ. Way back in Genesis 49, verses 22 through 24, we have an allusion made to this stone as Jacob was giving the blessing to Joseph. Joseph, excuse me.